I went through some of the cardiac issues in some detail with Ed, so I don't want to go through all that, but I kind of want to get the bottom line from you in terms of what you plan to do in terms of cardiac monitoring on your own patients.
Well, I'm certainly going to do the sort of fairly regular monitoring that we did in 9831, which was the trial we participated in. And in fact, the intergroup, which is going to allow inclusion now of trastuzumab for a number of its adjuvant trials, if you're HER2 positive, is going to incorporate that sort of monitoring in those trials. So basically, the monitoring path that was done by B31 and N9831, I think, is a reasonable one. Whether or not it's one for the ages, I don't know. Clearly, it's a lot of MUGA scans over a year and a half. I'm not entirely sure what the last MUGA scan accomplishes, at 18 months for a patient who has already been through all therapy and where you can't change anything at that point.
I guess the tricky thing too is at what point to stop therapy in an asymptomatic patient. And Ed, had this sort of two by two thing, looking at how much of a drop there was and sort of what the absolute value is. How is that going to translate into sort of your gut approach to this situation?
Well, looking at the, sort of cursory data that we saw presented yesterday, it looked like that if you were older, say 65 or older, and if you started with a baseline ejection fraction of, say, 50 to 55%, you had a stunningly high rate. I think it was 19% rate of developing congestive cardiomyopathy. That's pretty scary, and that certainly has to go into the risk-benefit discussion with a patient. Regardless, every patient who's getting trastuzumab close to an anthracycline has to know that there's a possibility that they will have serious damage to their heart. It is just in the same way that patients need to be told about the risk of leukemia if they're getting adjuvant chemotherapy. It's a finite risk. The risk is far, far outweighed by the benefit. But boy, yeah, it should be part of every informed consent discussion with a patient.
Well, also, it far outweighs the benefit for a patient with a node-positive tumor. But now, we're already sensitive to the fact that patients themselves are very interested in decreasing their chance of recurrence even by 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
But now, and so looking at a 4%, if that's the number, and it seems like it's in that range risk for a patient, for example, with a node-negative, good risk tumor, those numbers are going to start to look a little bit questionable.
One of the things that we're going to need to do, this obviously was the first pass look at the data. We're going to need to try and tease out which groups get the greatest benefit. Now, the problem specifically with the node-negative group that you just mentioned is that the joint analysis is well over 90% of the patients are node positive. So trying to come up with the balance of risk and benefit there may be a little bit more difficult.